Hello, and welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Royce, and we're a bi-monthly podcast. And if you like what you hear, you can also find us on Twitter at LCS Podcast. We're on TikTok at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. We're also on YouTube at Lie, Cheat, and Steal on YouTube. Look it up. It's just us, Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. We have full video episodes with cool little pictures and stuff. You can check them out there. And if you like what you see, like I said, give us a 5-star review or a rating wherever you listen to this. And if you really like it, you can also subscribe to our Patreon, where we release 2 more episodes every month. We just recorded one about Hasan Minhaj's joke, a scandal. That should be pretty fun, so you're going to want to check that out. That's at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. That being said, as always, I am here with my co-host, Kath Barbadoro. Kath, how you doing?
Hi, Pat. I'm good. I do want to remind both you and the listeners that this is coming out a month in the future. So we will have several Patreon episodes, including one from last month about Hasan Minhaj, where we're sort of stacking some episodes at the moment. But yeah, I'm good. I'm drinking a little aperitif. I have my fancy blackcurrant cassis. I gave you, so remember when you visited and I made you that bourbon drink with that stuff?
Oh yeah, it was so fucking good. Yeah.
I'm just drinking some on the rocks a little water. It's very tasty.
Oh hell yeah. Yeah, I went through two of my signature mango chiladas, which I gotta stop these, man. But I'm doing a job where I burn 800 calories a shift. So I'm just I got some room for a few of these guys.
Totally. I hear you. Man, speaking of, I just want to, if anybody, I know nobody like looks at me and is like, I should get workout advice from her, but I got some workout advice. I've been weightlifting pretty consistently for the last like 5 or 6 months now. And I just went to split days. So I used to do full body every time I worked out. And now I do an upper body. I do like upper body days and leg days, and just do that. Don't do full body. It's so much better. I can lift so much more. It's crazy. Like, I thought I was like getting more of a workout doing full body because you get more tired, but it's like fake tired. It's like not, it's not better. It's just do the one or the other. I was plateauing and I'm already like making so many gains because I just like am doing it differently. So yeah, if you're thinking if you're thinking about doing splits, do splits. I got a PR on a squat and a deadlift today. So doing good.
Good. Yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, yeah. So PR is a personal record.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm not gonna
say what it is because it sucks. I'm still like really weak, but it's the best I've ever done. So I feel good about it.
Yeah. My new apartment complex doesn't have a gym like the last one did. And so I'm working out like traditionally less. I'm still doing like floor stuff and do like push-ups, but like I'm back in a line of work where like I just work out all day.
You don't need to set aside time. I sit at a desk all day, so like,
I'll tell you, there's like that's the only way. If I look back at my life, I've had like good workout spurts, but the most consistent that I've ever done is just like when I have like a job where I have to work to actually do stuff.
Yeah,
and like yeah, it's a level I can't replicate on my own. Like there's no way I can like get what I'm getting out of just regular trips to the gym. Like I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm saying I personally can't do it.
No, like, totally. I mean, just
give up and quit.
That's why like getting in enough physical activity is impossible for most people in this country because we all have to work too much. Like, it's unreasonable to expect, like, of course everyone's overweight. It's like impossible not to be because we have to fucking work and like we're exhausted when we're not at work. So why are we gonna like, you know, prep a bunch of food or go to the gym? I'm fucking tired. I'm not gonna do that. The time I've been in the best shape of my life, it was when I was I didn't have a day job. That was like the only way that I could do it. I will never be in that good of shape again unless I like win the lottery. So like it is what it is. But split days, man. They're working out.
Split days. Get them. Split them up.
Anyway, I can't think of a segue. Let me think here. So I said I sit at a desk all day. I work in a writing department. The the protagonist of our story is a writer. How about that?
Okay. I like that. I was saying something along the lines of like, some say your body is a canvas.
Let me tell you what.
Yeah. Let me tell you about a real canvas. Or,
that's right.
Or, I guess in our case, I don't know what you details about the story. I would say a not so real canvas.
Yeah. So Pat has hinted at it. I'm doing another art story today, ladies and gentlemen.
We're getting real artsy fartsy over here these days, guys.
I've been on a streak. By the way, I feel like I say ladies and gentlemen as like a tick. I feel like I've been doing it my whole time in comedy, even though I want to say something less gender binary-ish, but I always say ladies and gentlemen. So I apologize, guys, gals, and non-binary pals, that I keep calling you ladies and gentlemen. That's a good one. Isn't that a good one? I don't know who made that up, but I do like that one.
There's a podcast I listen to on occasion, like when I had to like go to sleep. It's called Sleep With Me. Mm-hmm. And it's this guy, his voice like this, and he talks like this, named Scooter, and he just tells bedtime stories and you go right to sleep. Mm-hmm. But his opener goes, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that one. I try, at least when I'm doing like a political show, like a benefit show or like something like that, I try to not do ladies and gentlemen. No one's ever like gotten mad or anything, but it's just like a tick I picked up in 2010. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
now
it's
like,
so anyway.
I have fucked up and misgendered people left, right, and center. As a lot of people do, it's a mistake you make. I have never encountered this like militant, like this is my gender. And most times
it's a
person has been super cool, or they didn't say anything to me and I put the math together later and was like, shit.
And then
like,
you feel bad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
yeah, then you
like,
feel bad. So
I feel like it's mostly if they correct you and then you keep doing it wrong.
Yeah. If you're being a dick, nobody cares out the gate.
People don't care. But anyway, that was a diversion, but I just said ladies and gentlemen. It was like, I should address this. Anyway.
Yeah.
Today we're going to be talking about this guy, Paul Jordan Smith, who is maybe better known to people in the art world as Pavel Jordanovich. So
Is that the seed of the lie there?
this is a fun one. It's sort of a classic. It's a classic sort of let's make the art snobs look silly kind of deal.
All right,
that's what
it'd be funny if you're like, this guy is Paul Jordan Smith, better known in the art world as Banksy.
No, the fun one about this is that like, this guy really did not put very much into keeping up the fiction. It's not like he was not secretive about it. He was just pissed off. And so he did this and it kind of worked. And it's kind of amazing. So Paul Jordan Smith, he was born in 1885. He died in 1971. He was a writer. He was a Unitarian Universalist. He did a whole bunch of stuff. He was kind of an intellectual guy. He lived most of his life in Los Angeles, and his academic specialty was the 17th century texts and teachings of Oxford University scholar Robert Burton. So, by the way, this story comes to us from Artsy. This is from a 2018 article from Artsy. So this guy's a Robert Burton specialist, you know, like pretty obscure academic type guy.
But I have a career like where you just really know the ins and outs of a guy that no one's ever heard of.
That's academia is weird that way. You can like, depending on the weird guy you specialize in, you can make a lot of money if like rich people are also into that weird guy. It's pretty wild.
I listen to like some pretty dense academic history podcasts and they'll bring guests on. And like one of the guys, he's a little more like, popular history dude, but he specializes as Patrick Wyman from Tides of History. And I remember him being like, you know, there's this many texts that were written during the Renaissance, and during the Roman Empire, we had this many surviving texts, like 1300 different like samples. He's like, and if you study what I study, you read all of them. And it's just like, so you can't, he's like, you can't bring up anything from this fucking time period that I haven't read about already. And I was like, it's so like interesting. There's like this specificity. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you love going to school, you can do it forever. But yeah, so that's what this guy did. And he had a real chip on his shoulder, this guy. He was pissed off. So his first sort of you know, he was studying this guy from the 17th century. He was not a huge fan of kind of the modern world that he was living in. And he really was pissed off about modern art, which I mean, if you give you a little bit of background about the kind of art that he was pissed off at. But he first sort of got the grudge in 1913. He went to the International Exhibition of Modern Art, which was exhibiting at the Art Institute of Chicago. And he wrote, quote, "Up until that time, I had striven to march with my generation in accepting modern trends. Day after day, I went to see and to hear contradictory explanations of what was called modern art. And finally, I became disgusted, for most of the young critics were saying, in effect, quote, great masters in the past were misunderstood, and so we must accept and try to see whether they please us or not. Pleasure is not the point." So he's just like, why are you making this so confusing?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
So he's like, he's looking to art for meaning. And what he is finding is, quote, twisted, tormented abstractions by artists like Pablo Picasso and Marcel Duchamp. For many art traditionalists, these artists were like undignified, like they're polluting this like pure, beautiful thing that is art. They even didn't like people like Edward Hopper, who he did Nighthawks, you know, like.
Were the ducks at the diner?
The people at the diner, he did that one, sort of big. I really like his paintings, but
you know, I think the duck at the diner is like a dogs playing poker version of.
Yeah, I have not seen one with ducks.
Well, guys, if you're wondering if there's gonna be a blank canvas in this episode, that's me. I'm gonna learn. But yeah,
I'm gonna teach you a lot. I think if you think Edward Hopper is ducks,
there's a duck.
This is hard for me to know what other people know, though, because my mom is an art teacher. So like I know a lot that I think I assume other people know. And then I'm like, oh, no, you only know that because your mom teaches art.
Yeah.
I know Picasso, assuming, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, do you know Duchamp?
I've heard Duchamp before, but I'm looking him up right now.
And, Duchamp is mostly famous. The most famous Duchamp is the urinal. He's the guy who did the urinal.
Oh, I'm seeing it right here. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. He signed a urinal and put it in a museum, and people are like, "You can't do that!" And got really mad. I just put Nighthawks in the chat, by the way, for Edward Hopper. So, like, Paul Jordan Smith did not.
There's one of them with a duck, man. I'm telling you, somebody back me up on this.
So Paul Jordan Smith, he didn't like the Surrealists, he didn't like the Dadaists, he didn't like the urinal, but he didn't even like Edward Hopper, who was like kind of a more realistic painter, because Edward Hopper would sort of show the loneliness and discontent of the modern era. He didn't like that. He was like, art's supposed to be beautiful and nice and make you feel good.
There's a place for that. There's a place for that kind of art, but it's like, you know, you need a little meat with the taters, you know what I'm saying?
I just think of that that 30 Rock quote where Alec Baldwin is like, "We already know what art is. It's pictures of horses." <It's> like, so good. But yeah, so this show, this International Exhibition of Modern Art, it was like a landmark show. It was really important. And Artsy says the show reflected the zeitgeist of an era plagued by the anxiety of a rapidly modernizing world on the brink of World War I. But Jordan Smith perceived, quote, nothing but confusion and ugliness, a bear of either reality or romance. So he was like, this sucks. This doesn't reflect the world. It doesn't make me feel good. But I want to talk a little bit about Dadaism, which is kind of the movement that he hates the most, because his response to it is like sort of the point of it. And so it's interesting that he hates it so much, because it's like, this is always the thing when people get mad about the urinal, because people are still getting mad about the urinal. It's literally been 100 years and people are getting mad about the urinal still. So Dadaism sort of, it sort of coalesces after World War I, but it's the same, it's like, its roots are in this sort of modern art show. And then Dadaism takes it to the most extreme degree with the urinals and stuff like that. So it starts in Europe after World War I, which was one of the most, I mean, you know, history, World War One is like one of the most horrific, like, things that has ever happened.
Yeah. It was when we entered the modern age and we did it with our first introduction to the modern age was with warfare, weapons of war. And it was this complete bleak trench warfare turning point, fighting old style wars with new style weaponry and just people getting mowed down. It was I'll say it. It was bad.
It was bad.
I'll be the one.
It was bad, and it was bad in the countries where Dadaism developed. Like, it fucked France up. Like, this was dark. And this was mostly developed in, like, France and a little bit Switzerland, a little bit Italy.
Yeah.
The people who are coming up with this stuff, it's because their entire, like, sense of what the world is has been, like, destroyed. You know what I mean? And so they're like, we can't make meaning in anything. We can't derive meaning from any of these like great works because like we have basically suffered an apocalypse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So their thing is to sort of reject meaning altogether and reason altogether. And they were like, they were super anti-capitalist. They were really like radically left. And they would sort of, their whole thing was sort of just jumbling different things together. So they would do a lot of like weird sound poetry and like cut up different words and from like a book and then just sort of jumble them all up. Like they were really into sort of divorcing symbols from what those symbols traditionally meant. And this was designed to shake people up. This was designed to like get people kind of pissed off because they're like, but what does it mean? And they're like, what does fucking anything mean, man? World War I happened. What do you want? Yeah. You know?
Also, also the art, I guess you'd say like of like the classical age, it was like, I'm saying empire driven, but it was like usually used to prop up the strength of an empire. It was like, look at these great works of art that we have. Look at these great masters of sculpture and painting that we have. And it's like, well, that whole fucking thought process got us here. You know what I'm saying? And like now, maybe that wasn't all it was fucking cracked up to be, or maybe that isn't the apex of human expression.
Right. And I mean, think about like most of the quote unquote great works. They were made by commission for wealthy people. It was depictions of the elite. And so these people are like, well, we hate them. So, it's sort of like the point of the urinal is that like all of this is meaningless. And, the context of a museum does not make something inherently valuable. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's kind of the vibe. But so Dadaism, the term Dadaism is just like, there's debates about where it came from, but it's basically like, it doesn't mean anything. Dada doesn't mean anything.
No meaning. There was a great Frasier bit where he's talking about his son, Freddie, and he goes, his first words was Dada in reference to the early 20th century European art movement. And it's the joke that only he can pull off is Frasier Crane, like, or it could have been calling you daddy. He's like, oh, perhaps. Yes, that too.
Classic. And Paul Jordan Smith is like pissed off at Frasier like that, because that's the thing, is like, it's so funny that modern art, I feel like modern art gets the reputation of being enjoyed by the Frasiers of the world, the snobs, the elites, the people who the original Dadaists were like, well, we don't like them, like fuck
yeah
them.
Yeah,
you know. So
everything gets co-opted, man. Everything,
exactly. Exactly. But Paul Jordan Smith, he was like, I don't fucking like this. We know what art is. It's pictures of horses. He is not down. Yeah, yeah.
It is statues with no arms. Okay. that is art. Yeah.
Exactly. So in 1924, so like after this sort of shift in art has occurred, Jordan Smith is married to a painter at this point. And she does nice landscapes. She just does pretty realistic landscapes, you know. She does portraits, she does landscapes, and
the best she can, just with him breathing over her fucking shoulder,
right?
There's a shepherd, there's a field, it's a farmhouse, you know?
Exactly. So she gets some of her paintings exhibited at a local art show, and the critics say that they're outdated, you know. They're like, this is some old school, you know, stuff, some stodgy stuff.
Ooh.
And Paul Jordan Smith is not happy about this. He has had enough. He has had enough. He is sick of the art world. So he decides to get like, back at them.
New type of wife guy just dropped. Like guy
absolutely
who defends his wife's classical art.
Exactly. So he goes above and beyond as a wife guy, because what he does is he paints his first ever painting, which is, quote, a crude exaggeration of a savage woman in the modernist style, holding up a starfish that better resembled a half-peeled banana. To help along the modernity of the creation, I drew the woman a hut, which appeared to be toppling over on one side. I made her eyes a ghastly Gauguin-esque white and let one great breast exceed the other inside. Finally, he slapped on an arbitrary title. Yes, we have no bananas. And I am about to show you this masterpiece that he made. I'm going to put that in the chat for you. I don't know if there's a color version of this somewhere. I could only find like a sepia version, but yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, this looks like, this is fucking hilarious. Also, it looks like you would see this like in like a sixth grade art class on the wall, kind of like I put it with a bunch of other paintings. Yeah, I see this. Yes, we have no bananas. Banana looks like a swastika, though.
I think it looks sort of like it has a butthole. Like it's like a banana peel, and then in the middle of the peel is like a butthole.
That's a butthole. That's for sure. Yeah, man, and she's got a little Aretha crown, and then that little strip light in the back looks like a skull, but that means something.
Yeah, so to me, this looks like if you know Gauguin, like he's the guy, he painted a lot of pictures of Tahiti, like nudes in Tahiti with like big solid blocks of color. This looks kind of like a shitty ripoff of Gauguin to me. And yeah, so
that's the guy's first painting?
Yeah, I know, it's not bad. Like, it's bad, but it's like, it's his first painting ever. It's like kind of not bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So after he makes this painting, he submits it to various like exhibitions and, you know, contests and stuff. But he does so under the name Pavel Jordanovich, which is just the Russian version of Paul Jordan. That's who he says he is.
Yeah. Like Yevgeny Murmensky on Delocated.
Yeah, exactly. So he also claims to, with this painting, have founded the disumbrationist school of art. So this is sort of a joke because the movement takes its name from the word umbrage, which means shade or shadows, and dis because he can't draw them. That's why he named it disumbrationism. And you know, he presents himself like a serious Russian artist who founded this like sort of neo-primitive school of art. And it goes well. Like a critic reaches out to him and like wants to interview him and tells him this painting. So he renames the painting Exaltation. And the critics love it. They're like, this painting is awesome. Yeah. Tell us about Exaltation. Tell us about disumbrationism. I want to hear about your vision. So he goes with it and he invents a whole backstory. He said he was born in Moscow and immigrated to Chicago at 10 years old before contracting TB and moving to the South Pacific and then finally settling in Southern California. So, you know, childhood trauma, illness. Again, with Gauguin, like Gauguin went to Tahiti. He was like, I went to Tahiti too, and Samoa and Hawaii. And
and here is my crude character of what I think those people look like.
Yeah. And he submitted these like very brooding pictures of himself, which I'll send you now. They're very dark, which I think part of it is just like age and photocopying, but I think also they were sort of meant to be very moody looking, you know? So those are his serious artist portraits, you know?
Okay. Are those portraits or headshots? Those are portraits. Okay, I see that one now.
I think they're photographs. I think they are photographs.
Oh, okay. Imagine asking a comic for a picture for a headshot for a flyer, and they send you something with this resolution.
Like, yeah, it's like very dark. But I think he maybe didn't want to be recognized because like he was an academic at this point, you know? So
yeah.
And I think this is another example. I feel like this has come up in a lot of our scams lately where people's racism helps someone perpetuate a scam where like,
yeah, it's
like
you can hide in the shadows, and the bigger the racism, American racism casts a very large shadow that you can hide in.
Right. That you can do shady things underneath.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because obviously the Tahiti stuff, and then also the, he creates a few more works, one of which I will send you now. This one is called Aspiration, and it is again a very crude. You can tell me what you see when this sends. It's taking a while, but I'll tell you how this was described. So it was described as, quote, a delightful jumble of Gauguin, Pop Hart, and Negro minstrelsy with a lot of Jordanovich individuality. So you know they really have this guy's number. They can pick out his individuality. So I just sent you Aspiration.
Okay, and, here we go.
It's like a black woman in like a, looks like kind of a house dress or a muumuu and like a do-rag, washing some clothes. And
yeah.
With like a little
rooster. This is from a children's book.
Yeah.
Had a little nice little pink shirt. Some black socks. Okay. That's like yeah, I get like, I don't know. I get kind of what he's going for, but it's like he's not the worst painter in the world. Like,
that's what makes this story kind of interesting. Is like,
yeah,
he is playing a joke, but also like he kind of has some talent as a painter, and I don't know if he like knows that.
Yeah,
you know.
it's also kind of like one of these things where like the artist Hobson, the rapper Hobson, mm-hmm. who I really don't fuck with. He's kind of super corny, mm-hmm. but. He made a song like making fun of like Future style rapper. Well, Future the rapper, but like there's like a new trap, you know, and he had like all these fucking face tats and like 18 styrofoam cups.
Yeah.
And it was like making fun of that type of rap. And like the comment section was generally like, wow, your best song you've ever made.
Right. Like this is kind of not bad. Like maybe you should have done this instead of hating it.
Everything else you make kind of fucking corny trash, but this is actually pretty dope.
So yeah, people love this painting even more than the last one. It ended up in a French art book about contemporary art. So this guy was like, he became a celebrated painter based off of these couple paintings that he did. And he eventually just like, he never got caught. He just got sick of it. And so he confessed because he was like, this to like play a trick on the art world, but instead they just liked me and like didn't work, you know, or like worked too well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And how many hours do you spend making that where you're just like, oh, I'm going to get them so hard. I better patch this part up real quick.
Well, this
at some point it's like.
This is like another thing, though, that's like kind of crazy is he said he'd never spent more than an hour a year during the 3 years he was engaged with this hoax. So like he was just whipping these things up, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
oh man,
if he'd worked at it, he might have been a good painter. Like they're not the worst. I'm about to
say, was there a reaction from the art community? They're like, hey, or don't do that. What was the response to this?
I feel like they were embarrassed, but they like didn't make a big deal about it because it would be like more embarrassing to them if they made a big deal about it. You know,
yeah. And you gotta play it cool at that point.
I think they kind of had the same sort of thing that I'm proposing, which is just like they are paintings and we liked them, so
you know,
like maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know why this reminds me of that King of the Hill line, where it's like, well, what if I had trusted you, Peggy? Then where would we be? Where like she had pulled off an entire caper and it was predicated on the fact that Hank would take her at her word that she had the situation handled, and his behavior actually made the fucking plan work. And it's like, well, what if I had believed in you then, Peggy? Huh? Then where would we be?
Yeah. He wrote for the Los Angeles Times in 1927 when he was sick of this. He was like, I want to write an op-ed for the LA Times about my hoax. And he said, quote, "I got more publicity from this little joke, which had occupied me no more than an hour a year during the 3 years I was engaged in it, than from all of the serious work I ever did over many decades." Which,
way to self-own there, buddy.
I see, like, it's so funny because I feel like ultimately, like, the biggest sufferer of this prank was him, because he was like so, he was so mad about modern art, and then so like accidentally good at it versus the stuff that he toiled away on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which, like, I feel like, man, as creative people, we sort of know what that can feel like sometimes, where it's like, man, that's the joke that you guys liked, that one.
Oh yeah, 100%. Vanilla Presley, like the songs we do with those, like, I probably, like, I'm such, like, I don't want to, like I'm a snob with rap, but like I'm like constantly aware of, like, because of like my love for hip hop, that I'm like, comedy rap, like, I want it to be good. I want people to go, oh, that actually bangs, and I want every line to be like, to the best of our ability, to be like, oh, that's a very sarcastic flip, and it sets us up and it takes it back.
Right.
And like, Lane will used to be the one sometimes to be like, what if we were just like, bitch, you're dumb, or something like that. It's always like, Lane, like, he'll take these like calculated gambles on just like a stupid, corny joke, and I'm like, it's gonna feel real corny. It's gonna disenfranchise the whole act, and it'll just fucking go crazy.
Yeah.
People just love that line or whatever, and so I do know that feeling.
Yeah,
that's. Yeah, like, yeah, it's just it can be a shitty feeling, because you're like, oh yeah, that's the one, that's what you guys like.
Yeah, it's like, who am I to argue, I guess, you know, even though I like put my heart and soul into this other one, I guess you guys weren't interested. Like, yeah, so he wrote this op-ed, and then he actually then became the literary editor of the LA Times after this. So like, he did, maybe he flipped this into a actual literary career after writing his books about his Oxford scholar. Cause like he became the literary editor of the LA Times from 1933 to 1957. So, he wrote a bunch of books. He wrote, a book about, Ulysses by James Joyce. He wrote an interpretation of the philosophy of feminism. He like did all this really heavy academic work, a lot of it after doing this kind of bit. It seems like the art world sort of embraced him a little bit after this. Like, they seem to have a good sense of humor about it, because the year after he admitted to it, in 1928, the year after he admitted to it, he did one final exhibition of all of his disumbrationism paintings. He displayed 7 artworks in total, which he called the 7 Deadly Sins. They were, as far as I know, the only paintings he ever made. I'm about to send you one more. I think this is his weakest work, I will say. I think this is the worst of his paintings. But it's one of the 7. You can describe what you think of this one, Pat.
Yeah, okay, so we see like it appears to be like almost like what's his name, Custer, like a General George Custer to era Civil War soldier, he's gonna be approaching a native woman. Honestly, this looks like a mural on the side of an elementary school.
Exactly what I was thinking. Elementary school art project. Yes.
minus the fucking fat bazingas on this bra.
Yeah, there's some, you know? There's some pointy titties on her that probably wouldn't be in an elementary school mural, but
yeah, minus the milkers. This is definitely
yeah. So I think this is his weakest one.
Project.
I think this is his weakest one.
Yeah, he definitely had like inspiration in the others, where he was just like, oh, I'm turning the art world on its head. And this one, I feel like he just kind of leaned into the style.
Yeah, yeah. This is part of his derivative period, you know.
Yeah. Also, it feels like that would, like, the idea that he's going to, like, expose all these people as frauds, it feels like it just kind of, it made them look like they're like, no, this is the art we said that we liked, and you made it, and we liked it, you know? And it's like, you guys liked the art. I don't really feel like he got one over on them, in a sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, like, I think he was, it seems like a time at which they like sort of were rejecting the idea that you would even need training to make art. So it's not like,
yeah,
it's not like it being like, surprise, I've never painted before. They're just like, oh wow, you're like pretty good then.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, all these people. And I've seen that happen in comedy where people come in, they think they're gonna be like, I don't know, like shake up the scene. All these Austin kids are like, you know, weird nerds. Like, you know, like I'm not gonna like, I was kind of like that when me and my friends first got to Austin in 2011. You know, and they're like, it turns out it's like, no, these are actually just very sweet people who are supportive of what you're doing. And they're like, hey, good job, man. And you're like, yeah, it kind of feels like it would take the wind out of yourselves a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like, I mean, I think he was like more pissed off than they were, but it is still pretty funny that they took him at his word about his, you know, he invented this discipline of art and he's this like tortured Russian guy. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is the packaging does really help sell it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then also the fact that like, I talk about like the American ignorance of being a place to get scams done, those photos that he did, I can see somebody being like, I don't know, that looks weird. Like, no, that's what Russians look like. They're blurry, they're bleak.
They're bleak and depressed, and they had tuberculosis. Yeah.
It's a soot-covered land. They all look like that.
Yeah, so in this exhibition in 1928, he did these paintings, and he also wrote like joke explanations of each Decembrationist painting, you know, like setting out the principles of this movement.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, so he like really went all in on it, and the paintings, I mean, they have value because this is like part of art history, you know? So
yeah,
5 of the paintings are now housed in the UCLA Library of Special Collections. So like, I mean, the fact that 5 of his 7 paintings are in a collection is like, that's better than a lot of artists, you know?
Yeah. He's just like invited to like a ribbon cutting ceremony. He's like, got their ass.
And right.
Like, taking a free glass of champagne. It's like, this is your world now, man. Like, this is the senior part of whether you want to be there or not.
Yeah. It's like, you know what it kind of reminds me of? You know, the episode of Seinfeld where George is like, I'm just going to do the opposite of whatever I think they should do. And then I will be successful, you know?
Yeah.
And it works. I feel like that's what this guy did.
Yeah. Cause it just proves like, you know, the opposite of what you would do. It just proves like your instincts suck.
You know? Right. Everything you think is ugly and bad, other people think is good and cool, you know?
Yeah.
So like,
I see a lot of this like when you get like into like trad Twitter and shit where people like talking about like, look at what things used to look like versus what they look like now. Yeah, I'll admit a lot of new buildings suck ass. Like I'll give you that. Yeah. But like it is I've always gotten a little like a little pissed when I see the thing where it's like it shows like the Venus de Milo and then it shows like the banana tape to the wall and it's like, oh, art. And I'm always just like, God, it's like you're just saying in one without even saying anything, like you don't understand art, you know? Like I get a little, I'm not like a completely artsy guy, but like I feel like I can appreciate the fact that like, oh, everybody's doing this and a guy comes out and does this, that in and of itself is artistic or it's a statement because he's going against what other people are doing. And it's like, how do you not get that, you fucking simpleton? Like I get mad at that genre of internet criticism.
Yeah, it's just like these two pieces of quote unquote art obviously have like different goals and are like saying different things. So it's just because they're both art doesn't mean they're like directly comparable in the same way. Like art is not the same thing as a demonstration of skill. Those are two different things. Like,
yeah.
A demonstration of skill is a craft. It's not art. Like art is about expression. And if you have a lot of skill in it, you are maybe better able to express yourself. But like, it's art is not about look how good I can do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, It reminds me of the movie Amadeus when Salieri has his epic, and it's just like a little less revolutionary. It's a little more of the time. It's got a huge cast, and it's like everybody's like, "Oh, look at this!" And like you see Mozart, just like, this fucking sucks. Like he's completely not sold on it. Like this is very I can see that. Like also, like if somebody has like a true artistic spirit, they're gonna want to. I feel like you're gonna be intrigued at spitting in the face of the establishment a little bit, and like I can appreciate that attitude coming out in somebody's work. You know, well, like,
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, there's these, just like I love some rappers that are just complete idiots, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, just, you know, like, I'm a huge Zach Fox fan, and Zach Fox may be a better example because he makes good ass hip hop, but it's just like it kind of flies in the face of things. It's just all punchlines. He's always having fun. He's not making any kind of fucking statement. And it's just like, hey, I'm funny and I'm charismatic, and here's my rap song, and it's good. And I just remember like a time when I was younger where I would have been like, no, nah, man, anything about like, I don't know, like, I took shit too seriously, you know? So I can appreciate that kind of art.
I think rap is actually a really good way to understand this point, because like there's a lot of backlash against rappers who are not like super lyrical, and it's like, yeah, but that's not that's not like the music part, that's the skill. Like, not like I like Eminem is an incredible wordsmith. I don't enjoy listening to Eminem, you know what I mean? Like that's not like music I would put on. It's like, oh wow, that's like really, really complex, dense, intricate wordplay. That's really cool. It's not necessarily like the best rap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's people who like there's definitely, especially in hip hop, you get people who like the more dense in the wordplay, the more crazy the references, that and like the higher level of art. It's like, no man, there's like shit. You put on Broccoli by Lil Yachty, and that's just
right.
That's an insanely good song, and it's just as simple as can be. So like a lot of rap is good examples of that. I'm also thinking about the guy, I believe he's on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame board. Is he from the Rolling Stones? The guy, he wrote a book called The Masters. It's about the masters of rock music, and it features interviews with him, and it's all white male artists. And he was pressed about it, and he was like, well, Black and female artists don't articulate at the level of white men. Yeah, and it was like, dude, did you look at a fucking calendar today? Like you can't say that, dog. But also, I was thinking about that today. I was at work, and I was like, what he's saying is that this is the way that I talk about music. And the way that I talk about music is the only way it can be discussed. And the only people who talk about it are other white dudes who want to get into like this intricate, you know, rock historian discussion. And it's just like, can you, I get mad at people like that. It's like, can you come off your high horse for 1 second and just like maybe think that like a person who speaks about this thing differently than you or understands it differently could have something to teach you? Perhaps like the fact that this guy isn't talking about the dates that records came out or who produced it or who engineered it the way that you are, but they're talking about the way the music made them feel, the way it sounded, or the memory it had of them. Or they're just discussing it differently than you. And the fact that you look at that as that is lesser than your own appreciation for art really really pisses me off. Like, I remember hearing that. I was like, you just can't, like, see anybody else's point of view.
Right. It's like, my criteria for deciding what is worthwhile is the criteria for deciding what is worthwhile. And there's no other way to determine something's worth besides how I determine its worth.
Exactly.
Well, it's kind of interesting. So, like, again, to sort of bring this full circle, this guy, like, because I talked about Dadaism a little bit at the beginning to bring it back at the end, because the point of Dadaism was that people were disgusted with what they saw around them as like sort of the systems of power, right? That's they were angry, and they wanted to, you know, like disrupt the sort of conventional sense of what was important. The thing that's ironic is that's also kind of what Paul Jordan Smith wanted to do with his art. You know what I mean? This style had become the high art style that everybody was super interested in. And this guy was like, fuck that. I hate this. I'm going to make fun of it. And it's like, that is sort of what Dada was about originally. So like, you are kind of maybe doing it a little bit, like, in spite of yourself. I just thought that was a very interesting twist at the end of the article.
Yeah, that is. That's very good. I didn't think about that. It's like a real welcome to the resistance, comrade, kind of.
Right. Kind of exactly. Yeah. Which is, I think, maybe why they sort of took him in stride a little bit and maybe felt like, you know, like they'd been had, but they also were like, fair point. Like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, if somebody on the other foot, like if an artist had like infiltrated like the intellectual artistic elite and mimicked their style, they would be like, oh, this is fucking cool. And it's like, that guy just did that to y'all, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of where we leave it. So like after this guy had his sort of lark of an art career, he wasn't interested in painting. He didn't paint again. But he wrote a bunch of books and he was the literary editor of the LA Times. And he had like a very good career. He had a Wikipedia page where this is only one part of it. So like that's a good tell for someone who lived a good life. So, but yeah, I do wonder like how frustrating this must have been for him. Because I'm thinking about if it's worth it or not, right? And it's like he didn't really do what he set out to do, but also it does seem sort of fun. So
yeah, we wouldn't have been talking about him 100 years later if he didn't do this.
Right.
You know? And I'm sure that the latter half of his career was who knows? Because he was already established in academia, so maybe this did nothing for him. But you know, it feels like it feels like the worth it was the friends he made along the way. You know,
yeah,
it was like he had an adventure, he got out of his shell. You know, he went back to his beautiful traditional his trad wife who was.
I do wonder what this did to his relationship though, because like remember the whole point was that he was trying to avenge his wife and that he got more successful than her at art. That's gonna be tough.
Like she's like, man, yeah, this is a crazy adventure we want. Imagine if you had just, I don't know, stayed in your fucking lane.
Right. And
I was able, because now his shadow is hanging over her painting all the time. She's right. Like, oh yeah. Like my husband got involved, and the most attention's ever been paid to me artistically as a footnote in his story.
I'm trying to see if he ended up getting divorced, and I couldn't find it. But if they stayed together, I'm impressed with them. So yeah, that's the story of Paul Jordan Smith, aka Pavel Jordanovitz, disembrationism master.
Hell yeah, absolutely. Kind of like we talked about Ross Trent the other day, where you gotta like. Have some sort of understanding of like reggae to make that song. It feels like, you know, he had to have had an artistic flair. Like, you know, he was able to make all this shit up. Like, yeah, I don't know. I like the guy. Yeah, this seems like a cool character. I like his ass. So good. The life of Pablo. Who would have known? all right. Well, shit. Yeah. Thank you so much for telling us about that. Guys, thank you very much for listening. If you liked what you hear, like I said, we are on Patreon at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. We're on Twitter at LCS Podcast. And we're also on TikTok at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. And you can find us on YouTube simply by typing Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast on YouTube, where we have full video episodes. All of these paintings will be in there as well. So you can look at what we were talking about. Thanks for tuning in. We're recording these well in advance. So who knows where we'll be, but you can find out all of our dates and goings on by checking on our social media. I'm on Instagram at PZTX. And Kath, where can we find you?
I'm at Kath Barbadoro on social media. I have another podcast called What a Time to Be Alive that comes out every week. And come to one of my shows if you live in the New York area.
All right, cool, guys. Sounds good. Well, thanks for tuning in. Get out there and disrupt. Shake up the art world. throw up on a wall, take a Polaroid, sell it to the Met. That being said, guys, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Be safe, be smart, but above all, don't get caught.
Don't get caught. See you next time.